Hi, Gareth. So Gareth is the humanitarian director at the UK, which who everyone knows, and people say a brain behind the engine too, and which we will sort of unpin a little later. So hi, Gareth.
Hi.
And so let's jump into sort of questions that I have for you on the engine
Sure.
too, because it is such huge project that we are delivering within Save the Children UK and within HLA, and people have a lot of questions, and I think I'm trying to answer some of them on very top level, but I think there are people that are would better suited to go into some nuances, and I think we would like to hear from them as well. So one of them is you. So my first question, why engine two? Like, what so-called engine one is missing that we thought is important to develop engine
Yeah.
two?
Well, firstly, thanks for the opportunity to do this, and congratulations to you and the team for all the great work you're doing on Engine 2. Let me just wind the clock back to, actually, I'm going to take the clock back to the tsunami in 2004, which is the last time we saw such a big response from the public for a crisis. We hadn't seen anything like that for until now, until Ukraine happened. And as someone who was on the ground for Save the Children during the tsunami in 2004, I watched with dismay how we didn't use such a huge resource fully strategically. And when Ukraine happened, and we kind of knew there would be a very big public support, a lot of money would be raised, we realized that we had to not only respond to the needs of Ukrainian people within Ukraine, through all the partners and all the work we're doing there, and in Poland, where you are, and in the neighboring countries with refugees. We realized that the direct delivery of aid, albeit through partners, what we call Engine One, traditional aid approach, would be insufficient. The great risk with working solely in one way is you may not get a legacy of change from that, because you're responding in the here and now to immediate needs, to things that people urgently require. And there isn't always the space created for more innovation, for more collaboration, for all the other things that would help that situation, and not only for Ukraine, but for other situations as well. So recognizing that, and the example was, there was a huge evaluation done of the tsunami in 2005 and 2006, as you might expect, which criticized the lack of strategic thinking and the lack of creativity. Everybody got focused on delivery of big set piece aid responses, which were needed, but there wasn't anything on the periphery in the rest of the ecosystem happening. And so when we came to Ukraine, we said, look, let's learn the lesson of that. And let's ensure that we do everything that people need us to do in terms of direct assistance in the moment. But let's carve out the space for more ecosystemic work alongside that, what we ended up calling Engine Two. The Engine One, Engine Two language just came from the idea that you have more than one kind of twin engines, more than one engine of activity happening. And that's really where Engine Two came from. And at the start of the Ukraine response, I was very clear with the team. I was very clear with the DEC, the major donor in the UK, that we would devote a lot of resource into both engines, but a lot more than normal into engine two. So the capacity strengthening work, some of which is traditional, very, very important in the context of a country experiencing such a big crisis, but all the more innovative stuff. So things like the enterprise studio work, just trying and experimenting and searching for points of difference, new ways of doing things, and giving yourselves permission for that and resource for that on a larger scale than we often have in these big emergencies. Because actually what we want is a legacy of change. So too often in aid, the same problems occur. We say we learn lessons, but we don't actually change anything. And so the idea was, on this occasion, we're really going to devote a significant amount of our money to operating in this way, in a twin engine way, so that we will try and move the whole sector forward. We'll try and learn some really solid lessons, do some great innovation, create some points of difference, some new, respond to the fact that Ukraine is in Europe and that Ukrainians have tremendous agency and they have tremendous desire for self-determination in how the aid response goes. And we won't dominate them in the usual way with the big machine that comes in from outside. So that was really the idea. And so far, so good, as far as I can tell. I think you and the team have done a great job.
Thank you. Like, things are definitely progressing and moving. So, but also I wonder, because, you know, NG2 focuses on broadly this sort of research and capacity strengthening, but incorporates very diverse initiatives. They do make sense to me because we talk about sort of whole society approach, but they, I understand why it can be so, a bit ambiguous for some people. And how do they make sense to you as a join up initiative?
So one of the things that is different, I think, in this approach is that we like, in traditional aid, we like to plan everything. We like to have like traditional strategy. You know, traditional strategy is about here are the actions that will lead to the objectives that we want to sort of deliver, right? And so then we go into sort of traditional planning. We're looking ahead, but we're also working in a, you know, focused on the tactics and the resource allocation and aligning everything to a quite a traditional strategy. We're different on this one. It's more of what you would call an emergent strategy. An emergent strategy is kind of, it's more of a narrative, it's more of a story. It's more about saying, we want to build a different culture that searches for the new, that experiments, that tries different things. Some of which we know is traditional and capacity strength, things we already know. We're going to try and take them to scale. We're going to try and do things more with more kind of, we're going to give ourselves more permission to fail forward, to try things differently. And this is more of a, so it's more of a cultural approach to guide our staff to be brave, to try things. But it's also necessary for these kind of turbulent times we're in, when there's so much uncertainty, and Ukraine really is a watershed moment. We have to experiment, we have to try different things, we have to give ourselves that permission. The challenge with it, it can lack focus in the way you're describing, because it could be described as a big experiment. But it's more than that. There's a lot in there that we know is the right things to try. We've wanted to try them in other settings. We've wanted to try different approaches to capacity strengthening, and we've never been able to carve out enough space, time, resource, political will, whatever it might be. And there are numerous evaluations that show that. So this kind of emergent strategy is different to the traditional planning. So Engine 2 has a different kind of emergent strategy to it. And therefore what's needed is people to really embody that and really believe in it and see it as a way of thinking. And then what you end up with, if you do this well, and when you're leading a team like you are, you have to create some intentionality. You say, okay, we've got that kind of culture, we've got that narrative, we've got that permission, but what's our intentional approach to that? And if you take a sort of intentional view, you get to a kind of realized version of emergent strategy. It won't just be kind of blah, blah. It'll be actually, here's some very concrete things that have come out of it. And so therefore they'll connect together over time in the sense that we'll see the connections. We're not saying we can see them all up front. We can't plan it all out. The area you mentioned there around thinking, the project to create new thought, I think is very, very important. One of the challenges in the aid sector is that there has been a retreat from kind of proactive thinking in the moment. And if we can't recognize what's happening in Ukraine as a serious moment of rupture in the kind of international order, in the international relations, in the geopolitics, a return to some of the old kind of inter-imperial conflicts, it represents a very big moment, a watershed moment, which requires us to think deeply with great levels of expertise on what that might mean for aid. Aid is very traditional. It likes to do things that it's used to. Our argument is that without serious thinking going on around this, we risk making the same mistakes of the past. We risk not understanding the nature of the conflict we're in and what it means, not just for Ukraine, but for the world at large. So we want to use the expertise that exists within Ukraine, within the countries around. People have tremendous expertise in thinking, and we want to bring that to the fore. It can't just be the usual kind of way we do things, we've always done them, here it comes. And we saw that with the letter written by Ukrainian civil society, you know, so complaining that we've just landed a giant bureaucracy on top of their war of resistance against, you know, kind of a you know, an occupation, you know, an invasion. So already the premises of aid that you hear people talking about, what about neutrality? Well, what about it? It's, you know, what is the, that's where the thinking has to be new and has to be fresh and needs to be given space.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that you mentioned what important things. So we will have to see how that works as well. So I think for me, the learning element, the learning aspect of that,
Really important.
it's the most important, you know, because it's this is how it will tell us if this is applicable or replicable or adaptable in elsewhere.
Exactly. And so how you observe and learn as you go and the methods that you use for that is vital. And it's what I was saying to your colleagues from Poland. I said, look, don't just be compliant and obedient because here comes the big machine doing the big machine stuff, right? Just refuse, reject it, rebel against that. If you think that doesn't work in your context, that is your right. Because what aid needs to get to is this kind of self-determination. You know, people talk about, I don't like the language of things like localization because it, for me, it's still the powerful people kind of bestowing some kind of favor on other people. They're still setting the terms of the debate. What we really need is a self-determined indigenous response supported by a progressive form of internationalism. That's a different kind of language already to what we get in the aid system. So only when we start to experiment with different thoughts, with different actions, and have a process, like you say, Pavel, of really observing and a very dynamic action learning process that distills out from that the really, really kind of creative stuff that we think can work, not just in the Ukrainian context, but can be exported and used as examples of change to replicate in other places. Then I think we've got something very exciting happening. And I think with the great thing about the Ukraine response, it is well resourced. We wouldn't want the war to be happening. We wouldn't want people to be going through this, of course not. But they are. And the response has been strong in terms of solidarity. There's a lot of resource being raised. So let's put it to work for Ukraine and beyond Ukraine.
Definitely, like we touched on two things. Sort of, you mentioned what the future should look like in terms of what how the success of the engine two look like. But sort of to be sort of much more pragmatic, what
Yeah.
how this will look like for you in terms of what the work that we do in that response.
Well, I mean, I'm not really here to dictate that. I think that's for you and the team to decide. I mean, I'm sending, you know, the idea of like a different kind of cultural mindset, a different leadership mindset. I'm giving encouragement and permission, be different, try different. You know, we've won some battles already with our colleagues at the DC. Bless them, they're very busy. They work in a certain way. They've got a structure to how they process information and bureaucratize. And we had to go outside that, didn't we, in order to convey the richness of what we were going to try and attempt, whether that was the innovation side of things with Ukrainian civil society organizations, or indeed the thinking side. We couldn't fit it into the 75 word box that the and that's part of the challenge of aid, you know, is how to work differently. And so my encouragement is, I believe in all of the team. I believe in you. I believe in the team. I believe that you've got the spirit of what we're trying to do, and you'll be creative with that. And for me, I think outcome then is how our Ukrainian counterparts, how our Polish counterparts, how our partners, how they feel about how we've operated in this way. Does it feel like they had a huge role in determining what happened? Or does it feel just like clever words and the same old stuff happening around them? So that will be very, very important in determining whether we've been brave enough, different enough, whether we've been agile enough, whether we've created enough space, whether we've removed enough bureaucracy and rules. We won't be able to get away from the compliance reality of the risk management, and that has to happen, but it doesn't mean it has to govern, you know, our behavior. It doesn't mean we have to just be familiar and safe and do things we've always done. Let's try and push the envelope. That's the idea. So for me, it will come down to, you know, impact and whether we can tell stories of impact that show points of difference. You know, we tried this new approach to collaborative cash. You know, that's a big part of what we're talking about alongside. It can't just be, hey, here you go, partners, we'll give you some care. No, we want civil society to really access, the indigenous organizations to really access cash. You know, things that look, you know, will feel scary and different and, you know, like we're breaking some rules, but we'll find ways to do it. We'll find ways to achieve that. And we don't have to plan it all and know it all right now. We've only been doing this for what, 6, 7, 8 months, 9 months. It's still quite early. I think the key is that people are trying things, that there's energy in the space, that people feel like they have a voice and they can try things, and they're working in genuine partnership, in genuine solidarity with the people that we are trying to help.
Yes, and I think so. We, as you know, we're trying to use that the funding from the DC in a very strategic way, also within the HLA as well, making sure that sort of the solutions that we, you know, that we learn about, they might be, you know, we pilot maybe in that response, they might be replicated and adapted in other responses. So we see
That's
huge
right.
potential there, and this is where I see sort of how we can be very strategic about it. And when you think about other responses, do you see how do you see that sort of, well, I think the learning aspects come into it, right?
Yeah,
So.
I think what we're trying to do is use Ukraine to accelerate change, to accelerate necessary change in aid. Everyone's talking about this. Everyone's saying the old ways don't work anymore. The Ukrainian people themselves are responding with letters saying, we don't like this giant bureaucracy you're bringing to us. How's that helping us really? They've got a point. Everyone knows they've got a point. It's the same critique that we've been hearing for the last 20 years, in all honesty. And so that was the starting point. We're not going to repeat all those mistakes, not on my watch. We're going to create a different way of being. So it's about accelerating change. You know, it's a huge crisis, but it's well resourced, and that means that if we do the right things, if you and the team try the right things, and if you learn the right lessons from that, then that will accelerate change in the sector, because we'll turn around to other settings and say, hey, let's replicate that amazing thing that happened in Ukraine, in Engine 2. Let's replicate that. And that's how we'll start to use it as an accelerant for all the things that we want to do, which we often don't have enough resource. You know, we have to go through the same bureaucratic processes of proposing and finding a donor. We've generated quite a substantial, you know, kind of active amount of resource and activity for Engine 2 already. And that's exciting because the resource is there, you know, so we can focus our energy on the doing side. Knowing that we've generated the resource for this, at least to try and to do all the pilots we want to do. And the more we try, the more people will support it. Already, I can tell you, we are getting huge praise for this. So the chief executive, Gwen Hines, went to the trustee meeting for the DC. She said the other agencies were kind of green with envy when they realized how much we had given ourselves permission to do in this space. Now, okay, that's not about, you know, us being clever or anything. It's just about us having given ourselves that strategic option. And we're working in partnership with other DC agencies, with ACAPS on knowledge management. We're doing all the right things. It's collaboration is the central piece. So all the trustees of the DC, you know, the people whose job it is to decide whether we're doing the right things with the resource, they're delighted. This was last week, last Tuesday. They're saying, yes, fantastic, say the children. Thank you for having the courage to try this approach. We really think you're onto something. So we've got all the permission we need here.
It sounds like, and I think that's sort of because, you know, we the pushback on sort of the comments we're hearing as well, people understanding the sort of the crises around the world, right? And sort of it's the Ukraine that gets most funding and attention. So I think that's what you said, what you explained speaks to a lot of people from the organization and others, and how we want to be strategic around, you know, with that
Yes.
response.
The challenge we've got is, I don't think anyone feels good about the fact that so much resource has been raised for Ukraine, seemingly resulting in the fact that not enough resource is being raised elsewhere. Now, it's not the Ukrainians' fault at all, and we know that, right? But it is the case that Ukraine has dominated public attention. It has dominated the politics. It has meant that getting the same level of attention for someone like the Horn of Africa has been very, very difficult. And we kind of knew that was going to be the case all along, in all honesty. We were hoping that the Ukraine conflict wouldn't happen, but we all knew that given its location and the everything that's so significant about it, that it was going to dominate. So when you're working with publics, you know, it's very hard to predict how much cut through you're going to get. So even at the launch of the DEC appeal for Ukraine, you know, if people can remember, even at the launch of the UN appeal by Antonio Guterres, everyone was saying we need to respond to Ukraine, everyone, but don't forget other places. Everybody said it from the outset. So there is this. So in a way, then there's an important moral and ethical point here for us to do everything we can for there to be this legacy from Ukraine that helps to change how the system works and responds. It can't always be that we have to go to the public to get the public attention and engagement. You know, we have to create these kind of new thinking and new ways of change. And so we need a and that's why engine two is so important again. You know, engine one is the direct delivery, you know, big cash distributions, big winterization, medical assistance, all the traditional aid that the Ukrainian people help. But everybody who's working on that, and it interplays with engine two, of course it does, there's overlap and there's interaction. But those people doing that, you know, the team inside Ukraine, the teams that are focused on responding to the immediate needs, they're not going to have the headspace for all this other stuff. So we're going to have to provide that as an additionality, and use all of that to argue very convincingly for new ways of responding elsewhere. We've got this huge hunger crisis in the world. It's terrible. And it doesn't affect Ukraine in the same way. You know, the effect of Ukraine's inability to export all its grain for a long time is that it's exacerbated those problems. So, you know, Ukrainians are less likely, though they are having a very difficult winter ahead with power and everything else, they're less likely to run out of food than we already know that's happening in Somalia, right? So it is very difficult for all of us to look at this and realize that we haven't been able to do enough elsewhere in the world as a result.
Thank you. And sort of my final question, because, you know, you mentioned that sort of the big ambition that we have and sort of, you know, and again, it's not pressure because we are here to learn and see and observe and sort of, you know, you mentioned the action learning aspect of it. But still, like, where do we think we have to be realistic in terms of, okay, because we're using a lot of big words. And I think this is, you know, we say every presentation, transformational, sustained impact, etc. But and a part of me,
Real world examples.
Yeah, meal hat speaking. Oh my God.
Yeah,
how are we gonna demonstrate that?
So, you know, it all comes down to, me and my big clever words and my strategy and all the rest of it. I get it, right? I mean, that's what I do for a living. I sit on the balcony staring over the edge and thinking big thoughts. You know, we have a lot of resource in Ukraine. You know, the vast majority of what we will do for Ukrainians will be direct assistance in the usual way. You know, we said something like maybe 75% that way. If we're with the DC, if we're lucky, we might use 25%. I'm sure it's going to be smaller than 25% in engine two, but still, it's a decent effort. But it has to be really, really concrete examples. You know, the we've done this before, by the way, as Save the Children. So when we have piloted things and proved concepts, then we can take them to scale because we can show a rigorous approach. Here's real impact. Here's a real outcome. Here's a real new way of doing things. Let's scale it elsewhere. We've done that. That's where we got the HLA from in the first place, from in-house piloting on things like child protection, small schemes, 10 people. And then suddenly, 10 years later, there are 600,000 people in learning. It is possible. We have done it before. So my message to everybody is believe. You have to believe in what you're doing. Real world examples, then very good communication. I think one of the things, because I'm 55 and I'm not in the social media era, I forget the power of that. I forget just how huge that need is. So we have to tell the story of what you are doing very, very well. We have to use data well. We have to use social media well. We have to use internal communication well. We have to report well. We have to be creative in how we show outcome, because those stories are what vital part of change is, the storytelling. The origin story of why we did it, which is kind of what we're saying here, but also then the story of what's happened. You know, we have to turn this into human emotion, and those stories and the communication is what connects people to what you're doing. So it's key that everybody working on this really believes in what they're doing, really believes that they're going to be successful, and not everything will work. I say to everybody, if nothing failed, we weren't trying hard enough. We were doing it safe. It's only if things start failing that you know that you've gone outside the safe area, and celebrate failure. Celebrate it, because it's part of learning, it's part of innovation, it's part of transformation. And that word, these words are thrown around. Yep, I completely agree with you. But aid cannot stay the same. If it does, it loses its legitimacy. We have to get much more self-determination into it. We have to get much more indigenous activity. We have to get much more partnering, much more collaboration. We can't dictate the terms from the West in our convenient rich countries anymore. We all know this. So let's change it. And we do that with really concrete examples where we help people to tell their story. It's not our voice that we need in this. It's the voice of the people who upon whom, you know, our work is having positive impact. We get their voice out there. That's the key thing.
Thanks. You know, and I'm thinking it would be good to have the conversation maybe in a year time again.
Let's see where we get to.
Yeah.
Be brave, everyone. Be brave. Yeah. Don't set self limits. You know, you've got a resource limitation. You've got the resource we've got, but go for it. is my message. Go for it. There's nobody going to criticize you if you are trying to be different and trying to do the right thing. Do what feels right. Do the ethically correct thing. Now that, and I remember this years and years ago when in the tsunami, I know I mentioned it. The first thing I did when I got to Sri Lanka when I was leading the response was I just gave a check to each of the field bases. I said, just do whatever makes most sense for the people around you. What, really? You don't want a plan, Gareth? You don't want a proposal? No, there isn't time. There's too much to do. Here's $100,000. Go and do something useful with it immediately. Those are the things people remember, because the team in Batticaloa, they realized it was exam time. So they used their money to print exam papers. And all the kids didn't miss a year of school as a result. They all got to sit their exams. That's the thing. It's these kind of really creative things that, yes, that everybody will say, well done for, you know, getting all the cash out the door. It helped. Well done for winter. Well done for health. It'll be these individual little kind of activities that are different, that are the ones that people remember. And you're trying lots of those sorts of things. So anyone who's got these, you know, got a little project going that they think is really creative, those are the ones to give special attention to, because often that's where the magic is.
We should finish with that then. Thanks, Gareth.
Very good.
Yeah, and we're definitely checking again in a year time.
Let's see where we are in a year. But keep the faith, you know, keep the belief high, keep believing what you're doing. That's the key thing.
Thanks.
No problem, man.